music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. I hope everyone is having a great start to their Wednesday. We have a very interesting topic here today. I have a lovely guest joining me in the studio. This is Simi from the Women's Centre, and we're going to be talking a bit about the manosphere and sort of how it's impacting young boys, but also how it is impacting women and young girls as well in kind of a more technologically advanced society. Want to link it a bit to the TV show on Netflix, Adolescence, which came out earlier this year. It's based in a small town in England, which kind of, I feel like, was a first TV show of its kind, showing kind of the detrimental impacts the manosphere can have and how hidden away it is. So stay tuned for this hour as we have this very interesting discussion coming up. But first, I'm going to play what is a bit of a longer song than I normally choose to play. It's about 7.5 minutes, but I really enjoyed discovering this artist. It is called Art D'Echo. I played a song of theirs last week as well, but this is called Serene Demon off of their album called Serene Demon. So yeah, I hope you guys all enjoy the song, and we'll be back for a discussion afterwards.
Thank you.
welcome back to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio here from Simon Fraser University, where we just heard the song Serene Demon by the artist Art Deco off of the album Serene Demon. And we're going to jump right into a conversation. I'm here with Simi from the Women's Centre here at SFU on the Burnaby campus. And we're going to talk a bit about the Manosphere and its impact on, say, society as a whole today, linking it a bit to the Netflix TV show Adolescence that came out earlier this year. So, Simi, do you want to introduce yourself a bit, your role kind of here on campus?
My name is Simi. I am the current acting Women's Center coordinator. I know, wild, there's a job with that label title. I get paid real adult monies to do the things I do. Essentially, I help run and manage and support students in crisis in SFU. So we support undergraduate, graduate students, and FIC students on campus, and community members as well. It's all inclusive to all the bodies that need support. And then I have an active student board. I just finished recruiting, so we got 22 active members, and they helped me kind of put on the events and programming element of the center. But just to kind of like, I guess, catch all everything we do. So for the listeners who want to access the space, we give out gift cards for Plan B because we can't give out medication. We got pregnancy tests, safer sex supplies, harm reduction supplies for free, as many and as often as people need them to. We give out free menstrual supplies like pads, tampons, Diva cups when we get the donations for it. Period panties as well, that we got a donation from NYX as well. So something to make it low barrier and accessible. We run different types of programming. I'm hoping to put on a micro grant program in the fall for students in crises outside of academic performances, just like medical bills, phone bills, post-surgery, after surgery, abortion care, things like that where you need some money while you're in between moments in your life. And then I primarily just kind of am the point of contact. That's very frontline work. So I'm the first face that most people see. And then we go from there and I help triage students internally within SFU or outside of SFU if they need support. Many things.
I feel like that must feel so rewarding to you. Like,
yeah, it fills the cup. Yeah. I was in school here as well, so I feel like it's a full circle for little Simi to be able to occupy a space and do the job when I was younger and I was like, oh, this is a cool job. I'd like to do it. So it's cool.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah, I mean, I wish we had these kind of resources back at my university back home. We have stuff, but it's just, I feel like every time I talk to people on, like, here at SFU, I just think of how much further along you lot are in terms of, like, I don't know, development of these organizations and departments and the resources that you're able to have than what I see at my university. I don't know if that's the case for the whole of England, but for my university, that's all I can speak on. It's not there as much. But going into the Manosphere type of topic, I briefly spoke about this topic on my show on Tuesday, Sociologic, just because I found it very interesting. I obviously knew about the Manosphere, but I think the TV show Adolescence really perpetuated my interest in it. Because we were just talking before this about how it was such an interesting show that took a take on not just looking at kind of through one lens, but for those that haven't seen the show, they kind of, I feel like, dedicate an episode to kind of each perspective of people in the story almost. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting seeing the impact that it has not only on a victim's family, but also the person that got involved in the Manosphere, the impact on them, the impact on their family, because it was of a 13-year-old boy. I mean, I probably should explain a bit about the show for the people that are listening and have no idea what I'm talking about. Adolescence is a TV show on Netflix. It's got four episodes, each about an hour long, going through the story of a boy who is 13 years old who murders one of his classmates. A fellow 13-year-old girl, due to kind of getting involved in some very misogynistic and incel culture related online forums information. I don't think they actually specifically said what he got involved in.
I think it was more Instagram stuff because she was she added him as like incel because he was hung up on her, and I think that like everyone had a hard time figuring out the lingo that the kids were using online.
Yeah, because it's all like emojis, and this is where it's like
So the communication barrier was pretty prevalent until one of the sons of the police officers kind of disclosed what was going on.
Yeah,
but he was being bullied online, and like it was limiting his chance to build relationships with other females within his class because she labeled him as an incel, and that kind of funneled into his motivation to set things right with her.
Yeah. Right. And it kind of just follows the story of like the police investigation into him, because the first scene is him being arrested in his house.
Yeah, jarring.
Which was a very, because the whole show is a one shot take, so there's no breaks. You're watching the whole thing, which makes it, I feel like, makes it very, feel very real.
Yeah.
Because you are almost very much like a person that's walking behind it or watching it all happen.
Yeah.
But it's following kind of the investigation into what happened, why he did what he did, and then the ending is like the aftermath kind of the impact on his family. Definitely well worth a watch, I would say. How did you find it? Because I know we have briefly discussed it off air of like how you found the show.
I think it's a tough thing to watch, and I think it was shot I really enjoyed the cinematography of it and how it was shot and the mood setting, the lighting, and the way everyone was presented so raw and organically. It took me a while afterwards to kind of wrap my brain around it, and a lot of I think a lot of the aftermath was just like I couldn't help but be like, just hug the boy, the main character. The lack of like affection towards one another in any kind of relationship was very limited, and I think is cultural, and I think also like having family from London and stuff, I don't think it's like a, it's a common thing that people don't really do amongst one another, so it doesn't help. And I think a lot of it is just like seeing the education system, so teachers playing into that, seeing how like the socialization of his friends and like their thought process behind his logic, and just kind of seeing like the massive gaps in community, and like raising young children in that, and the lack of it, and just seeing like the different like racial division conversations, the violence, and just like not having any really tentative like supports, right? And we watch this main cop kind of go through it because his career is everything, and then you can see the breaking and disintegration of his relationship with his son, right? Up until kind of in the middle when everything kind of like simmers up to a point where he knows his case point, like he's got it, right? And then he takes a step back, right? So just seeing how men don't really understand things until a consequence of a big action ends up happening, and then they become very reflective. And even in conversations, like I find that most females and women and women identifying folks have these kind of conversations, but after watching the show, like it was hard to turn to my like dad or like my siblings or my partner and be like, what did you think, because their feedback was very limited, and their critical thinking, like I guess it wasn't the same as what I anticipated when I was having these thoughts, you know. So very interesting.
Definitely. I think as well it was interesting with the police officer, because obviously his son knew the boy, I'm pretty sure it was like either in the same class. Class, same year. And it was interesting that when he made the arrest of the boy's friend at the school, that he almost like straight away kind of, I think, reevaluates the amount of time he's putting into raising his son and his impact as a father figure, because you see him be like, let's go out, let's get some food after school, let's actually spend some time together. Because I feel like it kind of opened his eyes to, wow, I haven't been present, I don't know what's going on in my child's life, and this is the case that's happened to someone else whose parents were probably a bit more present and things, and if it's happening to him, what's it like for my son as well? And the fact that the son knew the lingo, was aware of everything that was going on, was aware of the manosphere, was aware of the language that it used. Because it is interesting that obviously younger generations are more technologically literate in terms of emojis and things like that, that the older generations can look at those online and have not a clue what's actually the hidden meanings behind it.
And also, like, this, he was also bullied, right? So, like, it made me think of, like, what made him different where he stopped and didn't funnel into that same culture online, right? Because he wasn't accepted by his peers. People made fun of him because he was the son of a cop, or the son of a cop, right? And he was visibly black. Is another thing, right? So I think it's interesting, like, all those things kind of play into it. And then the definition of being present, like, what does that actually mean? Like, are you present because you're sitting next to your kid and you're on your phone and they're on your phone and you're kind of in the same space? Or are you engaging in their interests and trying to figure out what the current language is? What language are they using to talk to their peers and what that means? And honestly, I feel like, I remember talking to my mom was like, I'm really happy I'm not raising you in this current time frame. And I got lucky raising you when I did in the early 90s and 2000s. Because, like, I remember when Facebook was a thing, I was in grade 9. Instagram wasn't a thing until I was in grade 12.
Yeah.
The first dating site, like, was Tinder and OkCupid. And that didn't happen until, like, second year of university for me. So I'm outing my age. But, like... So social media, different for me, it was like Tumblr, MSN, and those things, but that was only really way later into my teens than it was earlier on. So I think all those things have compounding ways, and I think it's just learning how to be present with youth, and then, like, learning to age with them so that you know that there's an adult figure or person that they look up to talk to as well, right? But all of those things were kind of like rotating in my head as I was watching and kind of processing everything that I had just consumed. But it was interesting.
Yeah, because I think, like, I grew up, I got my first phone, which was a very basic phone I could literally play music, play games, and text my mom on it.
Yeah.
When I was 9, because that's when I started walking home alone from primary school. And so my mom was like, okay, I want to know that you're safe, but this is, like, the level that you could go. And then I was thinking, when I entered, like, year 7, year 8, that's when I first got social media, and I was under the actual legal age. I think I was, like, 12.
Yeah.
So I was a year under the legal age, and it was a way for me to stay in contact with the friends that I'd, like, we went to different schools.
Yeah.
But I was, like, I look back on it now, and I was, like, oh, my God, I was so young to go on social media. And that's when it was, like, social media was still kind of, I'd say, just starting.
Yeah.
To become a thing.
Yeah.
And I think about it now, and it's like you see kids like age 7 and they're like just scrolling online and things like that.
Well, it's just like, you know, like TikTok and all of them, like it's the rise of clout on social media, right? So, like, you want to make your gateway into that. And before, incel culture was a little bit more harder to kind of get into. And now we got, like, the Andrew Tates and, like, the stupid male podcasts. Not all of them are stupid. but, like, it's jarring to see the rise. Like, I mean, if you look at where we're at politically and where we're at in the world with all the fascist governments that are existing everywhere, like, regression in legislation and bills, anti-immigration rhetorics, the strong... like fist on, like, reproductive rights and, like, what trans and queer folks can do. It all funnels down to, like, couple things of, like, controlling mass, like, folks, right? And how do you do that? Social media and, like, misinformation, the lack of teaching critical thinking. Like, I was talking to a few students about this because we were discussing AI and whatever, but I was like, all of these are made to make your life easier, but people can't sit and read a book. They can't go through an entire textbook, and you're not able to go through legislative pieces of documents to understand and decipher what you're reading, right? Mm. Those are all critical thinking. And then you go back and you have these conversations with yourself and your peers or your friends and so forth, and that gets digested down to very simple English, right? Yeah. All of that is just compounding reasons of, like, layer upon a layer of oppressions and XYZ. But I mean, ultimately, if you drift all that away, women are inherently looked at as property and things to be desired but not respected, and listened but not understood, and all those things. And that plays into and ties into how young men are socialized as a group together, right? And maybe the anomaly in younger circles often are ostracized and, like, bullied. So different dynamics playing into all of it, which was evident when watching the show. Scary times.
Very scary times. Looking at, obviously, Adolescence came out earlier this year. I don't know if you've seen much other mainstream media portraying the manosphere and things like that, but did you think from Adolescence the portrayal of the manosphere was a fair portrayal, or was it like overly simplified in kind of what you think?
No, I think it was done like in a really good, simple way. I don't think a big complicated theme used to be very complicated to explain it. I think it was a very like pointed depiction of it. I think it's not something at least I had come across like seeing it. I think I'm used to seeing the extremes of commodifying off of like male and female bodies and sports and media and things like that. If anything, I think most of my focus has been going on of like music culture and impacting young men and the conversations of consent and a lot of like integrating both genders. Like you can't fix one problem unless you don't include the it has to be everyone that's part of it kind of coming into a conversation. And then, like, coming from my community in India, like, genders are often divided and, like, really kind of taboo to interact with one another until you're of marrying age, which then sets everyone up for failure because men have this very problematic upbringing of how to interact with a female. So I think this was a really cool and interesting way to just simplify it, call it for what it was. And then, honestly, like, even watching the show, you didn't walk away feeling like there were solutions. It was just a lot of dialogue, right? A lot of action, a lot of dialogue and discovery. And at the very end, the last episode, it was like, I kind of clicked. But no one walked away being like, we have like a plan to like fix this problem, right? And it was up to the audience to decipher what that meant for them, right? Which was a really cool way of going about it, because I do think it's an ever-changing conversation piece. And there's been a rise of, like, micro-influences online. Like, a lot of moms who are boy moms, like, the boy mom culture, too. I'm not sure if you've caught wind of that. But on my algorithms, there's a lot of boy mom stuff of, like, you know, that weird incestuous relationships that mom often project and predict on sons. Because they've felt one way or another in their marriage, or their situations of living with other multi-generational family members. And kids are often either parentified or, like, a primary focus for another parent to kind of like heal through it. And then as that person grows, it's harder for you to manage that relationship and expectations because they become their own person. That's what that is. Like, kids are autonomous adults in their own ways, right? They're their own individuals. You cannot control them, right? But you can guide as much as you can and let them fall and falter. And then you learn from that teaching moment. And that was the primary thing I went back on a lot. Like, yes, this 13-year-old boy committed a very vile act, but why? And then how can we move forward? Because he has his entire life ahead of him. And once you're in the criminal system, your life is kind of painted for you, right? That record follows you. And if people aren't on it, if like there's not a community supporting that individual, if there's no element of restorative and community justice attached to it, you become a byproduct of the system that has already labeled you a criminal. So you're going to fall into that narrative, right? And we kind of saw that in the third episode when he was going through his therapist, when he was being violent and he was fighting people and all those things to outlet his frustration, right? Conforming to that machismo, that macho vibes of, we'll get you attention if you do X, Y, Z, right? And if you let that go and that continues, that's all he's going to know.
Yeah, because you really saw it when he was communicating with the psychologist therapist that he was like whacking the hot chocolate cup off straight away the minute. And the fact that she stayed very composed and calm. You could see it really diffused the situation of him because he was like, wow, I'm not getting the reaction of it either.
He was trying to scare her. Yeah. He was trying to implement his dominance in that situation. He brought up her looks into the conversations. He hated the fact that she focused on his inherent fear of letting down his father because that's the male figure he ultimately looked up to the best way, right? And it came back down to her asking, like, he's like, he never hit me. He never hit anyone. But, like, violence doesn't need to be physical. It's compounding reasons of words and language, the lack of or thereof. But yeah, seeing him trying to assert his dominance, seeing him try to play into that narrative of a victim because he wanted her so badly to see him as a victim. And she would not bend the knee because she was like, no, I'm not done with my investigation. Like, do you want to do X, Y, Z? And it kind of plays into the thing that he went back to the same violent socializing element of it because he clocked that sure she wouldn't agree with him, but he didn't really feel remorseful. Right?
Yeah.
He wasn't, like, sorry about it.
No.
Right?
He didn't apologize
at the end.
Yeah. I was thinking during the conversation with her, though.
But it was performative, right? Like, he didn't mean it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, that the whole thing, like, he held on to the fact that he was a victim through the whole thing, right?
Mm.
And, like, his father broke down crying because he saw it for what it was. But at no point no one in his immediate circle said, you did it.
Mm.
Right? Like, the mom, the sister, the dad. None of them said that.
Mm-mm.
They're just upset at the fact that he got caught and he's in this situation and it puts their family in a precarious situation. And then they have to reconcile and deal with the aftermath when he's not in their life and he's in this juvenile detention center and they're living their real life. And people are angry, so they're mistreating them. So